The 100 Years' War, the Duguesclin period, the French attack on Aquitaine, 1377, part 3. Now, after the success at Bergerac, the Duke of Anjou called a council of war in his tent. He decided to press on westward down the Dordogne River towards Bordeaux. The situation was incredibly favorable, in contrast to the north, where Philip of Burgundy had been driven from the field by bad weather and supply problems. Southern France was enjoying fine weather and one of the most bountiful harvests in recent memory. Fresh troops were on their way from the north, and more had been summoned from Languedoc. Towards the end of the first week of September, Edward III's son-in-law, Enguerrand de Coucy, arrived from the Île-de-France with 700 men-at-arms. Enguerrand had admired Edward III and refused to break with him while he lived. These ties would never be inherited by the child king of England. Charles V had persuaded him to enter into his service within 14 days of the death of the old king. As he had prepared to fight against his former friends, he sent his English page north to deliver a letter to Richard III, renouncing his English lands and his membership in the Order of the Garter. It was his duty, he declared, to fight for the King of France as his natural and sovereign lord. His wife, Edward III's daughter, who had been in England when the truce was expired, joined him in France after Edward III's funeral, but ultimately returned to England early in 1379, shortly before she died. Of their two daughters, the elder was brought up in France and married into the French nobility, while the younger stayed in England and became the Countess of Oxford and a prominent figure at the court of her cousin. It was a symbolic division. The Chateau d'Ambrieres in Bordeaux was a scene of confusion and panic when Bergerac fell. The Seneschal's council met on September 3rd. They issued an appeal for help to the nobility and the towns and sent urgently to England for instructions. The strongest personality among them was Sir William Elham, the governor of Bayonne, who seems to have appointed himself as acting seneschal. His main priority was the defense of Bordeaux. He gathered together the remnants of Felton's army and the few remaining garrison troops. From these, he formed two companies to defend the western and northern approaches to the city. One, under his own command, was to hold the walled towns of Lilburn and Saint-Emilion at the western end of the Dordogne Valley, where the main thrust of the Duke of Anjou's offensive was expected. The second, under his two lieutenants, Edmund Criswell and William Chandler, was ordered to hold the north shore of the Gironde River at Bourg and Blaye. The strategy was forced on Elham by lack of manpower, but tacitly it abandoned the whole of the Dordogne Valley above Saint-Emilion to the French. It also left Bordeaux itself without captain or garrison, as the council acknowledged. The city would have to be defended by its citizens. They hired men-at-arms wherever they could find them, but they had no money with which to pay. Unless they received 4,700 livres of Bordelais, it's about £600, immediately, the jurons in the city declared the defense of the city would collapse. The council told the constable that somehow or other this sum would have to be found, and somehow or other it was. Money, however, was no longer the council's main problem. As implications of the loss of Bergerac and Felton's army sank in, the loyalty of the Gascon nobility and the towns began to drain away. The Gascon prisoners from Emet were taken before the Duke of Anjou and his camp after battle. Several of them later claimed that they had been threatened with death unless they abandoned their English allegiance, but this is probably untrue. Anjou is known to have bought them from their captors in order, he said, to turn them to the king in our allegiance. He may well have applied to them the policy of Charles V that applied the Cap de Buche, refusing to let them ransom themselves unless they submitted. For whatever reason, they did submit within a few days. The two barons of the Angenais, the lords of Duras and Mandelin, took up new homage lightly in the fickle tradition of the region from which they came. They returned to the English fold almost immediately in return for a bribe of 600 livres bordelais, or £80. Loyalty was relatively cheap. Better perjure ourselves to the Duke of Anjou than to the King of England, our natural lord, who has been good to us, they reasoned, according to Froissart. Baron d'Albert and Raymond de Montant de Musson were more considerable figures longstanding allies of the English, whose defection was a serious and public blow. Bayard delivered up the powerful castle of Cusac on the north shore of the Dordogne, a serious impediment to Ellam's efforts to hold the lower reaches of the river. He also made himself responsible for recruiting fresh recruits to the French cause in the Entre-deux-Mers east of Bordeaux, where his main influence actually lay. Raymond de Montant delivered up much of western Perigord to the French. When Criswell and Chandler arrived with their troops at Blaye, Montant's territory for many years, the citizens shut the gates in their faces. They later submitted to the Duke of Anjou. Defection is contagious. Soon after withdrawing to Montcalm, Boutiquet Albert, whose career in English service dated back to 1350, made his own submission to the French crown, undertaking to hold as many as 27 castles on the Gascon march for the Duke of Anjou. This, the most remarkable submission of all, was certainly voluntary. It was Boutiquet's judgment that the way things were going, this was the only way to get out alive. So the French are really moving on the English. Bordeaux is in serious trouble. See what happens. Now the sources for this: The Hundred Years' War, The Chronicles by Froissart, The Hundred Years' War by Perrois, The Hundred Years' War by Nylans, and The Hundred Years' War, The House Divided, Volume 3 by Sumption. So I hope you enjoyed that. And as always, don't forget to come by the website, summahistorica.com or historyaccordingtobob.com, and ask a question, leave a comment, check out our merchandise, and if you like what we're doing, please feel free to support us. Thank you very much.